I don't think we've even seen the tip of the iceberg. I think the potential of what the internet is going to do to society, both good and bad, is unimaginable. I think we're actually on the cusp of something exhilarating and terrifying. There is an alien life.
I don't know if you know this, but Major League Baseball season is starting soon. Okay, yeah, we got a couple, four or five of us are excited. It is waning in popularity, but I think it's gonna make a comeback. I think it's the greatest sport ever. And if you disagree with me, I have the microphone, you're wrong, so. I think it's gonna make a comeback though, I do. If mullets can make a comeback, anything's possible. I'm a big baseball fan. The off-season of baseball is exciting because people get traded, and as a fan, I'm a Cleveland fan, as a fan of a team, there's always like bittersweet stuff with losing a player. In fact, I got an X account. If you don't know what that is, it was Twitter at one point, now it's called X, and I was on there because you get really quick information there, and I saw this post, which is a picture of Shane Bieber, no relation to Justin, but he's an incredible starting pitcher, and it says thank you on there, which typically means that they're leaving. And I was kind of bummed because I don't want to see Shane leave. He's our best pitcher. He had some injuries last year, but at the same time, like, I believe in him. And I see this, and I'm like, I'm bummed about it, but it's part of being a baseball fan, especially a Cleveland fan. We get rid of all of our good players. It's what we do. It says that we've traded him to the Chicago Cubs. Calm down. I was bummed about this. If you don't know why, it's because back in 2016, the Cleveland Indians lost to the Chicago Cubs in extra innings of the last game of the World Series in Cleveland. It was heartbreaking for us. So if you're going to lose one of your best players, you don't want to see that person wearing the Cubs. You just don't want to see that. So I was bummed, but again, it's part of the sport. And then I got angry. I got angry because we traded him for, quote, cash considerations and a player to be named later. And if you don't know what that means, I will translate it for you. The ownership of the Cleveland team was telling the fans, quote, we hate you. That's what it meant. We don't care about your feelings. This year's gonna suck. That's basically what happened. So I was bummed. And if you're a Cleveland fan, you know this feeling. You're like, I'm done. I don't want to root for it. It's just, I'm done. I'm tired of it. It's too much. So I text my friends. I've had a text group with them for about 10 years now. We talk about baseball all the time. I said, Bieber's gone. It stinks. And Cubs, cash consider. One of my friends expressed doubt in the story, and so I did some digging, and I had been duped. It wasn't a real story, and I should have noticed this right away, because if you can't see it, the handle of the thing that tweeted this was not at Cleveland Guardians. It was at Cole Lopez 77. I should have caught it right away, but I was so upset, I just believed it and ran with it. So I learned my lesson. I was more careful on social media. 5 days later, I'm back on X, scrolling through. I see a big baseball announcement. And I was like, this is crazy, but it was a player who had been in major leagues, and now he's trying to get back in the major leagues, and he had been signed, and I was like, this is exciting news. But I learned my lesson, so I did some digging and found out it was a hoax, it was not true, and I did not send the text to my friends, and I learned my lesson, and I saved myself some embarrassment. That's not true. I immediately bought it. I sent it to the same group of dudes, and they were like, are you sure this time? And I was like, oh, no. Again, I need to learn my lesson. Social media is like the wild, wild west for people like me, for gullible types. It's just a terrifying place to be when you just believe what people tell you. Like, okay, last year, April Fools, it may have been last year, maybe been the year before, April Fools. You should know that on April Fools, people are trying to mess with you. I forgot that. I saw an official announcement on social media that from the Coca-Cola company that said they were putting cocaine back into their product. I believed it right away. It's like, why would they do this? Is the government gonna stop them? What's going on here? It's already not healthy. Now you're gonna add coke into it, like literal cocaine into it. For 10 minutes, I believed the story, and then I realized I'm a dummy, and it's April Fool's, Andy. I'm very gullible. And so when I was asked to speak on social media this weekend, I already knew what I was gonna say. And this is the whole point of the message today. It is this, and it's gonna be a shorter message. Social media should be banned for everybody, everywhere, at all times. That's my TED Talk. Thank you for coming. Okay, some of you are cheering. That's not the message. You're going to be here for another 20 minutes. Sorry. That's not the message. though it's kind of how I feel sometimes. Some of you are cheering. We have some strong opinions about social media. Some of you agree with that statement. Others of you like it. You love it. You enjoy it. There's a lot of opinions out there. So I had to discover what you actually thought about it. So I asked on social media. I asked you, what are the positive and negative effects that social media has had on your life? And you told me, positive effects. We'll start with those. First, connection, the ability to connect with people that are similar to you or different from you. You can join groups of people that have similar interests. You can get updates on family members or friends that you don't see in person anymore. There's connection opportunities there. That's a positive effect. Then business. People literally make their incomes using social media. And for most of them, they're doing good. Like, it's fun stuff, it's funny, or it's helpful. And that's a positive effect. Others of you run small businesses and you promote the small business on social media. That is a positive of social media. And then last, you see like life hacks. I said hacks, and one of the people is like, hacks aren't, you shouldn't hack into people's stuff. It's like, okay, life hacks. So that's like how to peel an egg, or you know, what you can use peanut butter to get sap off your hands. I've learned these things from social media things. And you know, then information like recipes or up-to-date news stuff, as long as it's, you know, real. And so then, those are the positive things. There's more positive things out there, positive effects of social media. There's a lot of negative too. And when I asked across different platforms, the number one negative effect that social media has had on all of your lives, it was the top thing over and over and over and over again. Like the number one thing, the number one negative effect that social media has on our lives is this. Incorrect information regarding Cleveland Guardians trades and other sports information, which obviously preys on the gullible. It's not my words, they're yours. You said it. I'm joking. Those are my words. No, that's not the negative. That's for me, it's negative, but this is the negative that we have over here that we saw. Comparison. While social media can provide valuable connection opportunities, it also invites us to compare our lives to other people's lives, to feel less than or to feel better than. It's not good. We also see there's a great opportunity for wasting time on social media. I don't even need to describe this. You know the feeling. Like when you realize you just spent 2 hours doing whatever it is on social, or four, or five. You're watching videos. And then there's bad information, because there is hacks and good information. There's bad information and fighting on social media constantly. And it doesn't lead to anything good. There are positive effects of social media, and there are negative effects. And I didn't get to put all of them on there. I'm sure there's others that you're thinking of right now. But the more that I researched, the more books and articles I read, the more that I realized that social media is extremely powerful. It's very, very powerful. Look at what the U.S. Surgeon General put out last year. The current body of evidence indicates that while social media may have benefits for some children and adolescents, there are ample indicators that social media can also have a profound risk of harm to the mental health and well-being of children and adolescents. It is powerful. Dr. Jonathan Haidt, social scientist who's been researching, says this: we are now 11 years into the largest epidemic of teen mental illness on record. As the CDC's report showed, most girls are suffering and nearly a third have seriously considered suicide. Why is this happening, and why did it start so suddenly around 2012? His conclusion is he sees a massive correlation between the advent of social media and this mental illness epidemic, specifically with younger people. He continues and he says, the dose response effect of social media use is larger for girls. For boys, moving from 0 to 5 hours of daily use is associated with a doubling of depression rates. For girls, it's associated with a tripling. Social media is powerful. It's powerful. The temptation, though, if you're like me, is to believe, well, I'm not a part of that. Like, I'm not a part of that younger adolescent generation. And though that's probably true for many of you, you have to remember, too, that these young people are growing up. And this is the world. This is what they're carrying with them into adulthood. Like, they have been held captive, and they have been convinced of things that just aren't true about themselves. And not only that, if you're an adult and you don't feel like you're a part of this, you know, if you're a user of social media, how it can negatively affect your life, how it changes the way that you view actual human beings. It's powerful. Maybe you're here today and you don't really use social media. That's okay. I believe that this message, even though we're going to be specifically talking about social media, I believe that this message will be pertinent and it'll be relevant for anybody, regardless of your use. And as I was researching and as I was praying and thinking about what passage would God want me to share with you? There just was one that crept up all the time, just kept popping up. And when we read it together today, you're going to think that this particular passage was actually written about social media. And it wasn't. And we'll get to that in a second. But as we read through it, there's this through line that keeps coming up as it relates to social media and the way we live our lives. And it's going to be your bottom line for today. So we always try to give you a line that summarizes the whole talk. So if you get the one thing today, this is the bottom line. It's this: your why determines your what. So what you do, specifically on social media or even in life, it's determined by something else, like your why you're doing it. So, for instance, when you log on to Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, Snapchat, whatever it might be, LinkedIn, if you know why you're logging into that thing, it'll change the way you use that thing. If you don't, it leads to all kinds of issues. Your why will determine your what. And we're going to see that throughout the next few pages of Scripture. We're going to be in a letter in the New Testament. If you aren't aware, the New Testament is the portion of the Bible where it's like Jesus' life and then after Jesus' life. And then it's composed of biographies, letters, and other types of writings, historical documents as well. And in this, the one we're going to be looking at today is a letter written by a guy named Paul. Paul was at one point an enemy of the church, and then he became a follower of Jesus. And he wrote much of the New Testament and also started many of the churches you hear about in the New Testament. So Paul is writing to his protege, Timothy, who's running a local church for him. And this is toward the end of Paul's life, so he's imparting some wisdom to Timothy, yes, but this wisdom, the Bible, was written to a certain group of people, but written for us. So it applies. And so we're going to take what he says and put it as a lens over our use of social media, and if you're not a social media user, other areas of your life as well. What does he say? He starts with an analogy. In a wealthy home, some utensils are made of gold and silver, and some are made of wood and clay. The expensive utensils are used for special occasions, and the cheap ones are used for everyday use. Now, if you're like me, you're one, like, I don't have any gold utensils. I don't know, like, that'd be kind of weird if you had that, but that's how they lived back then. So I was thinking, how does this apply to us today? Let's just say you're having people over. Like, maybe you're trying to impress a group, like, in-laws are coming over because you're just getting to know them, and you really, you know, you're trying to impress, or some other people, and you put out stuff that's breakable, like plates that can break, because you trust them, and nice silverware, whatever, you're going to put your best foot forward. But if the Rechtenwald family is coming over, four crazy kids, crazy dad that doesn't stop moving, you're probably going to do pizza and paper plates. That's what you're going to do. You're not going to put the nice dishes out there for that. We all have certain things like that in our lives. So he's using this analogy to get people to think like, okay, I understand that. And then what he does is he tells us why he's using that analogy. He says, if you keep yourself pure, you will be a special utensil for honorable use. Your life will be clean, and you will be ready for the master, for God, to use you for every good work. It's a very important verse, here. But what's important about it is we have to understand this, what Paul is not saying. We have to be very clear about what he is not saying, because the temptation is to think he's saying something that he's not actually saying. The temptation is to think that what Paul is saying is that you got to make yourself pure so that God will accept you and love you. That you got to do the right things, vote the right way, believe the right thing, talk the right way, don't talk the wrong way, don't drink this, go to church, attend, read your Bible, serve, give money. You got to do all those things, and then God, he has his little attendance checklist and all that stuff. He's like, yep, this measures up. He's good. He's going to heaven. Like, that's the way that we feel about God oftentimes. If you're just moral enough, then God will be pleased, and he'll be happy with you, and you'll get to go to heaven one day when you die. It's not what Paul is saying. In fact, that's not what you see throughout the New Testament. That is not it. That is the opposite of what you see. The good news, the gospel. Notice, Paul doesn't say if you make yourself pure. He says if you keep yourself pure. Why? Because, and hopefully, like, for some of you, this is the one thing you need to hear. If you just leave with this, you're golden. You cannot make yourself pure. There is no amount of moral behavior that you can do that impresses God enough to give you the keys to heaven. There isn't. There isn't an amount of money you can give, bad words you can't say, a church attendance, whatever, that will make God impressed enough with you so that you can go to heaven one day when you die. There isn't. Instead, we don't make ourselves pure. Jesus made us pure through his perfect life and his resurrection. That's what makes us pure. So Paul doesn't want you to think, okay, got to be moral enough. Instead, it's Jesus made you good enough so that when God views you, if you follow and you trust in Jesus, if when God views you, he doesn't see all the mess. He doesn't look at you and go, well, yeah, but there's this, this, and this. So if you figure that out, we'll be fine. Instead, no. He sees Jesus' perfect life. And then that's attributed to you. This is the gospel message, the good news. You don't make yourself pure. Jesus did. No, you keep yourself pure. How? Through you cooperate with God into becoming more and more like his son, Jesus. And as you do that, then God is happy with you, right? Then God's pleased with you. Then he loves you. Then he forgives you. No. As you cooperate with God and he makes you more and more like his son, Jesus, you are then prepared, you are ready for God to use you for every good work. So if we want to be prepared, I'm talking to like if Jesus followers right now, if you want to be prepared for God to use you to positively affect the people around you, you have to be prepared. You have to prepare yourself, work with God to become more and more like his son, Jesus. Then you'll see the stuff change in your life. You'll see the way in which you use social media or the way in which you interact with people change. Why? Because your why determines your what. Why you're here determines what you do while you're here. What's your why? Your why is your purpose. It's why you were here. Christians, in an overarching sense, Jesus followers, you were here because God wanted you to be here so that you could be his witnesses telling everybody about the good news of Jesus, making disciples of them. That's your overarching purpose. And that should inform the way in which you step on to sites like Facebook, Instagram, Snapchat, et cetera. It should change the way you interact with people. The problem is that social media, again, is very powerful, and it's easy to forget why we're on it in the first place. We get sucked into it. You can watch documentaries and read the stuff on it. It is designed to keep your eyes glued to this screen, to keep you there as long as possible. It's very powerful. And as I was thinking through this content, thinking through this passage, I was intriguing as I read through it that there's like three areas of life that Paul talks about, all of which social media has a ton of power over. Three different areas. And to make it easy, and because we're in church, I used alliteration. I named all of them C. They all start with C. And you're like, why'd you choose C? I'm glad you asked. It's because Jesus' last name is Christ. Didn't work. I told that joke. This is the third time. My wife told me it didn't work. His last name isn't Christ. It doesn't. Okay. Let's just say it's for, somebody told me, Cedar Creek Church. Does that work? Is that okay? Both cheesy. Let's move on. Please forgive me. Okay. Three times in a row it didn't work. Band thought it was funny, though. Okay, three C's. These are the areas in which social media has a lot of power over your life. It has a lot of power in the content we consume, the conflict we engage in, and the character we're shaping. The content we consume, the conflict we engage in, and then those two kind of help to form the character of who we are. So we'll see that through the letter. We're going to start with the content we consume. What does Paul say? He says, we are going to run from anything that stimulates youthful lusts. Now, of course, when you see the term lust, you think of something like sexual in nature. And though that's a part of it, that's not the whole picture. The word lust could be translated as passions, things that excite you, things that you get wrapped up in. And then there's another really important word, youthful. That could be like immature. Things that children do, that adults probably should not do anymore. So what does that look like today? I was thinking through this, I'm surrounded by kids a lot. I have four of them. My third, his name is Baker, and he's a lot. I mean, he's a toddler age. He's 18 months old. But the cool part about Baker is he's hyper-responsible. Like, he loves to do things. Like, he loves to throw things out for us and go get his brother's pacifier and get a blankie. Like, if you ask him to do you a favor, he gets, like, so he's passionate about it. I want to help. And his newest thing he's super passionate about is helping to feed the dogs. He loves feeding our two dogs. So he'll walk over to the dog food, and he'll say, food, and he'll walk over to the dog food, and he'll start grabbing. And what he does, it takes it very seriously. This is his job. And he grabs a little bit of the dog food, he gives a little bit to the dogs, and he keeps a little bit for himself. And he eats it. Yeah, he does. He just nibbles on it. Just one piece. That's all he needs. We're laughing because it's a child. But let's just say I invited you over to my house for pizza and paper plates, and you show up, and I'm like, hey, real quick, I just got to feed my dogs. And you're looking over in the laundry room, and you see me going like this. All right, there's some for you, and then there's a little bit for me, and I'm just eating kibble. You'd probably look at your wife, your husband, and you'd be like, we got to go. This guy's weird. I don't eat dog food. It would be a mark of immaturity. It'd be silly. It'd be weird. You wonder, why is he doing this? That's a silly example, but how often is the content that we consume on social media marked by immaturity, by youthful lusts, by youthful passions instead of God-honoring good stuff. How often is the hours and hours we spend on social media not marked by growth and being shaped to look more and more like Jesus, but instead to look more and more like something else? We're going to run, as Paul said, from anything that stimulates youthful lust. We're not just going to do that, though. He says we're going to pursue righteous living, faithfulness, love, and peace. Why? Because we're cooperating with God so that he can make us to look more and more like his son Jesus being righteous, faithful, loving, and peaceful. If the content you're consuming, if the content I'm consuming on social media is not making me more righteous, loving, faithful, and peaceful, then we have a problem with what we're doing. The temptation is to fix the what. You got to go back to the why. Why am I here? I want to be made more and more like Jesus. If the content I'm consuming is making me more angry, making me more bitter, making me not like people, well, that doesn't fit in with the picture of who Jesus is. So I got to go back to my why. Why am I here? Why am I doing this? But not only that, this can be hard work to examine the why, to get clear on what you're doing. It can be hard work, so you shouldn't do it alone. Paul says you should enjoy the companionship of those who call on the Lord with pure hearts. Be around actual people. And I'm preaching to myself here. When you're around actual people, try not to have your phone out scrolling through social media. Like, pay attention. I think about this all the time with my kids. I do not want my kids to say, yeah, Dad really loved his phone. I don't. But it's tempting. It gets you. And you're in there and you're watching the videos and you're sharing things or whatever. And then for some of us, like, you're drawn to things that pull you away from Jesus. You're drawn to things that don't make you into the person you want to be and that God designed you to be. You're watching things you know you shouldn't be watching. You're downloading, you're consuming stuff that are changing you. And you don't even notice it. So you want to be around people. The people that can hold you accountable, people that can speak truth into your lives, people that you look up to, people that help you to be a better person in that sense. And what's interesting is that social media promises connection in some sense, and it can provide it in a very small way. But what's interesting is what John Delaney says here. He says, technology allows for communication, not connection. Technology satisfies the data part of my brain, the who, the what, the when, the where, and the how. It doesn't allow the part of my brain and body that registers connection to be fully seen and experienced. For some of us, we're finding community on social media, but we're missing out on authentic community with actual people that are present with us. So the question we can ask whenever we're on any of those sites, whenever we're engaging with people in general or content, is this: is the content I'm consuming destroying or distracting me from my purpose? To love people, to be peaceful, to be patient with them, to be righteous? Is it distracting me from my purpose? If I was put here to be a witness of Jesus to the world, then is this helping? The stuff that I'm watching, is it helping? In an even more practical sense, if I'm supposed to be on social media to promote my business or to check on my grandkids, should I be really fighting about the next election? Should I really be fighting about all this other stuff that I see? Is the content you're consuming destroying you or destroying or distracting you from your purpose? If it is, revisit the why. Figure out why you're on there. Remind yourself of that. It's not just the content, though. It's also the conflict. This is the part of the passages where I'm just like, man, he must have known about Facebook. He didn't, but he must have known. Not God, Paul. So here's what he says. He says, again, I say, don't get involved in foolish, ignorant arguments that only start fights. That definitely feels like he's talking about social media. Now, I'm going to do this, make you uncomfortable. By a show of hands, how many of you have done this before on social media? Got some brave souls here at Perrysburg across all six campuses. I'm sure there's some other brave, honest people. Keep your hands up. Now, if you want to, you can add yourself to the mix if you don't start or be a part of the fights, but you watch them. Yeah, there's my people. You're the popcorn people. Yeah, I know you. That's me. I don't want to put my own thoughts out there. I just watch. This is great. I know how to find a controversial post. Best way to find one, lots of comments. No matter what, if you got a lot of comments, people are fighting about something. What's interesting, though, is I was talking to a good friend of mine, and he reminded me, he's like, you know, when you think, we're talking about social media, he said, when you think about the Roman Empire, yeah, yes, dudes do think about it. I don't know how often, but we do. He said, when you think about the Roman Empire, you think about the gladiators and how people would gather, thousands of people would gather to watch people tear each other apart. And he's like, not much has changed. It's just online now. And that hit me. I was like, man, that's me. I don't like that about me. I forget when I'm, you know, sitting back laughing at the comments that there are actual human beings that right now their blood pressure's elevating, their heart rate, it's like their heart's beating out of their chest. They feel personally attacked, so they're going to attack back. And then I forget too, like, yeah, okay, so people aren't actually literally being torn apart, but we just looked at the evidence for what social media is doing to us, what we are doing to each other, and I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm complicit. The conflict I engage in, which might look different from how you engage in it, is not good. It's not who I want to be. I don't want to be a spectator at in a gladiator games where you see people's lives being ruined, and yet I find myself drawn to that, and some of you do as well. So we're not going to get involved in foolish, ignorant arguments. And he says that only start fights. And this is really huge, because how many of you, I know a lot of you, have watched these fights or you've participated in them? How many of them end like this? Wow, this was so revolutionary for me. Thank you so much for your contribution. I am now changing my mind, and I believe what you believe. None. It never happens that way. People get blocked and it just ends. It's just terrible. Somebody disappears, like that kind of stuff. No, that's why you know it's foolish and ignorant. Even if the topic is important, the way in which we go about it, the conflict we engage in, is not going well for us. It's leading to all kinds of problems. It's foolish. It's ignorant. He says, a servant of the Lord must not quarrel, but must be kind to, what's that word? This is going to be a test. It's everyone. So, yeah, but what if she said, kind to? Yeah, but you know, he said that, do you know what she? So, okay, we're going to be kind to everyone. How hard is that? Super hard. It is. It's very hard. But Paul doesn't say, be kind to everyone, unless, you know. No, be kind to everyone. Then he says to be able to teach. Some of you are like, that's not me. That's you. You're the one with the microphone. You said it earlier. He's not talking about just people who teach on a stage or on a platform or in front of a bunch of people. He's talking about all of us. He says you have to be able to teach. If you go back to the original passage we were looking at, the first part where he talks about being a utensil ready for every good work, if you're constantly engaging in conflict that's upsetting people and pushing people away and upsetting you, you are not able to teach anyone. Jesus followers, listen to me. If you are rude, sarcastic, mean-spirited, and a bully on social media, nobody cares about your faith and they don't want to hear it. If your goal as a Jesus follower is to be a witness to the love and the grace and the mercy and the beauty of Jesus, and none of that shows up on social media until randomly you post a Bible verse, everybody's rolling their eyes. You're not able to teach. You have rendered yourself unable to teach. Unable to teach. He says we're going to be able to teach by keeping ourselves pure and be patient with difficult people. We're going to gently, not sarcastically, not rudely, we're going to gently instruct those who oppose the truth. What happens if we take the Jesus route instead of what we tend to do? What happens if we're kind to everyone? If we're patient when people are being difficult? And if we use gentle, like if we're gentle in our speech, what happens? What can happen? Here's what Paul says. Perhaps God will change those people's hearts and they will learn the truth. Gentleness, being kind, being patient. Instead of trying to jump at making somebody lose the argument, a zinger and whatever, or even just watching it, is the conflict, here's the question every time, is the conflict I engage in pulling or pushing? When you engage in an argument, are you Christian, Jesus follower, are you pulling people closer to Jesus? Are they seeing the beauty and the love and the majesty of Jesus, or are they not? Are they being pushed away? Now, here's what we know. We know that if you're not, if you present the gospel to everybody, it's not like everybody's just going to accept it because you've been kind. We know people will still reject it, but here's the deal. You do not need to make it unnecessary. You don't need to make it so that they have to reject it because you've been rude. You need to be as kind and gentle as you possibly can and ask yourself the question, is the conflict I engage in pulling people closer or pushing people further away unnecessarily? Paul says perhaps God will change their mind. And this part is key. He concludes this portion. He says, then they will come to their senses and escape from the devil's trap, for they have been held captive by him to do whatever he wants. For those of you that would not say, you don't follow Jesus, you would not consider yourself a Jesus follower, I want you to hear this clearly. As a Christian, as a follower of Jesus, I do believe that everyone is going to worship something. You're going to worship something. It's just how we are. You're going to worship money or sports or fame or sex or power, whatever. You're going to worship something. You're going to be drawn to something, and that thing is going to hold you captive. It's what it does. It's what it does. My heart's desire is not to tell you that you're not held captive. My heart's desire is that you would not be held captive by all that stuff, but that you would be captivated by the love of Jesus. That you'd be captivated by him and that you would see what life is like, real, true, authentic life with Jesus is and not that other stuff. But Jesus follower, don't miss this, because Paul can also be addressing you as well. Just because you're a follower of Jesus doesn't mean you can't get held captive to a political ideology, to a particular addiction. It does not mean that you are not susceptible to this. I know this from my own experience. It's very easy to fall in line with something else that takes away from what Jesus wants to do in your life. When something else becomes king and Lord of your life rather than the king of the universe, you can be held captive as well. And my heart's desire is that you will experience freedom from that captivity. You won't be held captive by that stuff. You'll be held captive. You'll be captivated by Jesus. And so the content that we consume and the conflict we engage in can really affect us negatively, especially with our relationship with him. And really what happens is the more we engage, and you know this, you know you're held captive when it gets easier and easier to do things you know you should not be doing. It's easier and easier to do things you know pulls you further away from Jesus and not closer to him. It becomes easier because your heart gets hardened. You don't care anymore. The question you need to ask in general when you enter into any social media or any conversation with a human being is this: am I becoming more like Jesus? Is my use of social media, my engaging with others, is this how Jesus would do it if he were me? If it isn't, we have a problem with what we're doing. And our temptation is to fix the behavior, and there's a place for that. But ultimately, we got to go back to the why. Why are we here? And let that change the way in which we operate on social media or in other parts of our lives. Am I becoming more righteous, peaceful, patient, loving, kind, and gentle, or am I becoming something else? Because I like to post things that make people think, or I like post something controversial because I really believe it's true. And there's a place for that. But is what you're doing leading you to be more anxious and angry and irritable, or is it leading you to be more patient, kind, gentle, and loving toward others? We have to get clear on what is going on, and if we don't like what's going on, we got to go back to why. Why? Because your why determines your what. I love what John Mark Comer said in his book, Practicing the Way. He says, if we are rooted in the infinite scroll of social media, mindlessly on there, it will form us likely into people who are angry, anxious, arrogant, simplistic, and distracted. That's not a purpose-filled life. That's a waste. I don't want my kids, like I said earlier, I don't want my kids to be like, Dad really loves his phone, and he's just constantly doing this. I don't want my life to be marked by being anxious, angry, arrogant, simplistic, and distracted. I want to be purposeful. If I'm being honest, I want to read more. So what I did was I was evaluating my use of social media, the things that I do. I know it just doesn't help. And what I wanted to accomplish. And you look at your screen time, you realize how much time you waste on social media. It's a lot, no matter where. It's a lot. And so then I was like, okay, I'm going to limit myself. You've done this probably before. You can limit your screen time. I'm only going to spend 30 minutes a day on social media. So I did it. And then when the 30 minutes runs up, it goes, hey, you're out of time. Do you want more time? Just put in your password. And I'm like, yeah, of course. Want more time? And then you just keep going. And you keep putting the passcode in. You're eventually like, proof for all day. I'm done with this. I need to just keep going. And you realize at the end of the day, you had another day where you wasted a ton of time doing something you didn't really want to do. You didn't read enough. You didn't go work out. You didn't exercise. You didn't spend good time with your kids because you're sitting there scrolling through social media. So then what I did is I asked my wife to put the passcode in. So now when I'm out of time, when the 30 minutes is up for combined for all my I'm done. You know what it's done? Every time I log into Facebook or Instagram or wherever, I immediately ask myself, what am I doing here? Like, why am I here? Because I only got 30 minutes. And if it is, I want to laugh really hard. I'll find funny videos, and I'll laugh hard for 30 minutes on the dot, and I'll get content to share with you here. But if it is, I want to post something for work, or I want to encourage people, I want to see how things are going to my sister's kid, like all that kind of stuff, then I'm purposeful because I've limited myself. I've become focused. My why has started to determine my what. The problem here is, though, when I talked earlier about about being a special utensil. Some of you have been thinking about this the whole time. I know this. Is that you hear the phrase, if you keep yourself pure, and that's an impossibility. You know, because you're going to mess it up again. Paul says, I'm going to remind you, if you keep yourself pure, you'll be a special utensil. Your life will be clean. You'll be ready. But you're thinking, I'm never going to be ready. I'm always screwing it up. I'm messing it up constantly. If you, Andy, if you knew what I did this morning, let alone last night or the week before, whatever, if you knew, you know, like, I'm not going to be that clean utensil. I can't. It's impossible. You know what the good news about dirty utensils are? They can be cleaned daily. What God promises us through his word is that his mercies are new every day, so that even when you watch stuff you know you shouldn't watch, even when you enter into conflict you know is pushing people away, even outside of social media where you do stuff you're ashamed of and you carry it around, you feel guilty, you as a dirty utensil in that moment can be cleaned daily. Our temptation is to run away from God and to say, oh, well, he's embarrassed by me. I'm not going to be around. And you just hide from him. And God doesn't go away from us when we engage in that behavior. Instead, he's pleading with us. Come back to me. I want to offer you new life. Every single day, I want to give you a new start. And so we get a chance to approach the throne of God and say, please, I know I have your forgiveness. Thank you so much for that. I know I have new mercies today. I'm going to go out with purpose today. The good news about dirty utensils is that you can be made clean every single day. It is not all up to you. It's a cooperative effort between you and God. Your role in it is trusting him. So today, maybe you need to place limits on your social media use because you don't think you can handle the power and the stuff that goes on that what we talked about. You feel like you're going to go right back to that content, right back to that conflict, right back to the stuff you know you shouldn't be doing that's negatively affecting you and everybody around you. Maybe today you need to log out, delete your accounts. Maybe today you just place limits on it, 30 minutes a day, and have somebody else have the password. Maybe today what you're going to do is I'm going to say, okay, you know what? I don't really struggle with that as much as I think probably everybody thinks. I'm going to be more purposeful when I'm on there. When I see that content that I shouldn't be watching, I'm going to ask myself, is this destroying or distracting me from my purpose? If I see the conflict and I'm tempted to go watch, I'm going to remember there's human beings on the other side of it, and I want to pull them closer to Jesus, not push them further away. And then ultimately, I want to be made more and more like Jesus, to be righteous, peaceful, patient, loving, and kind. Imagine what would change, not just on social media, but in the real world, if we were becoming more and more like Jesus and less and less like the world. I think the world would be a much different place. I think our communities would be a much different place. That's my prayer for you today. God, I am pleading with you to give us more of your presence, to remind us of how desperate we are for you, to work in our hearts to make us more and more like your son. God, help us to be people of righteousness, loving, peaceful, patient, kind, and gentle people. Help us to remember why we're here, why we're on social media or anywhere else, God, so that we can step into every environment with purpose. God, I pray for those who are going to start following you today. I pray that you would put something on their heart to let them know this is a big deal. It's a big commitment, but it's going to be an awesome new life. And Father, I pray that you continue to bring people closer to you, whether it's through social media or not. And we pray this in Jesus' name. Amen.